Good afternoon. Delighted to welcome you all to the courtroom for our next case, but we are especially delighted to welcome Brown Deer High School. Would those students please stand? Thank you. You may be seated. The students are with us with a program, a national award-winning program. The program is sponsored by the State Bar and this court. It's cleverly entitled Court with Class. And we invite students from across the state to come and join us for an oral argument. They're given materials about the case that they will hear. They come for oral argument, and were you here at noon for a discussion with a justice? No. Well, you missed it. Ordinarily, the students come in the morning for one of the two cases, and then a justice is assigned each day to meet with the students and discuss the processes of the court in taking cases and in deciding cases. We don't discuss the substantive issues and merits of the case. Perhaps we can get a justice who will, after this argument, talk about the processes with you if you can stay for that discussion. So we'll leave that open at the moment. If anyone would like a summary of the case we're about to hear, raise your hand, and our Deputy Marshal, Mr. Pond, will give you a summary. And over here, Mr. Pond. Let me introduce the court to you all. On my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Now, he's the justice assigned today, and perhaps he can meet with you after this oral argument, or we'll get another justice.
I will be delighted to meet with the students.
There you go.
Good. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Rogensack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And to her right, Justice David Prosser. And on the far right, Justice Annette Ziegler. With those introductions made, I'll call our third case for today, 09-AP-1469 and 09-AP-1470, Covenant Healthcare Systems, Inc. versus City of Wauwatosa. Arguing on behalf of Covenant Healthcare System is Attorney Don M. Millis. Mr. Millis.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, Justice of the Court. Good afternoon. My name is Don Millis. I am one of the attorneys for Covenant Healthcare System, the petitioner in this case. Joining me at the council table is my partner, Christina Summers. To start by summarizing the five issues that are presented here, and briefly, really briefly, talking about Covenant's position on these cases, on these issues. The first issue, the issue which the Court of Appeals found dispositive, is whether the St. Joseph Outpatient Center is a doctor's office and therefore not exempt. Covenant agrees with the definition that was used by the Court of Appeals in St. Clair versus Monroe, a 1997 case, that defined a doctor's office as a place where doctors have their offices. Because the physicians who practice at the St. Joseph Outpatient Center neither have their offices, or actually have no offices in the center, and for other reasons that we've articulated in our brief, we believe the outpatient center is not a doctor's office. And if I may reason by analogy, a hospital outpatient facility, similar to the St. Joseph outpatient facility, whether it's located within the confines of a hospital or whether it's located in an off-campus location, is no more a doctor's office than a courthouse or this hearing room is a lawyer's office. We may provide services here, but it's not where we maintain our practice.
Well, what if we gave you a room in this building? Well, just like the press has a room.
I understand.
And the press is not part of our staff or the legislature staff. So suppose we had a room, particular attorneys who do a lot of appellate practice.
Well, let me, I was actually anticipating that question, and I'll answer it this way, and if it doesn't quite do it, I'll try to have another go at it. I think the analogy was, in many courthouses, there are little rooms that are set aside in trial rooms.
Oh, that's conference rooms.
Conference rooms.
But I'm going to set you up.
Okay.
In a
Don't
room
be so
here.
Quick to say that.
What a deal. And maybe I'll say that you get, attorneys get three or four rooms, and I'm going to parcel them out by our Court of Appeals district, one attorney from each district. If I had a room in here and I had the authority to do that.
I think the doctor's office limitation was intended to deal with doctors that maintain their own particular practice. If you're talking about a situation where, as at the outpatient center, where there are cubbies that any doctor can use momentarily for 20 minutes or whatever to dictate their notes or make a phone call, that's not their office. That's just a place they can use. That's not unlike a nurse's station in a inpatient hospital or other facilities that are set aside for doctors to do the same purpose. That's not where they maintain their practice. So I guess I would say that's not a lawyer's office if we're using the same type of definition.
When you're talking about a cubby, are you talking about a cubicle?
The actual testimony was cubby. There were, and I apologize. I wish I had a photo of one of those.
Could you describe cubby for me, please?
I believe my understanding is it's a place where you've got a set aside, probably less privacy than we would think of as a cubicle, and probably a few of them, and you got a chair, and they can use a cell phone, or they can take out the file, open, go through the file. That's about it. It's a very nondescript, and it's not exclusive. Once you get up and you go see your next patient, if you another doctor come in, can use the same space. It's not.
How does that fit with what was going on in the St. Clair case?
St. Clair was an actual physician practice. It was a for-profit practice that was acquired by the Monroe Clinic, which is the name of the hospital. They operated in their own building for a time, and then they transferred to a new building that was built by the hospital, the Monroe Clinic. There, all the physicians had an office where they actually maintained a practice, with the exception, I think, of the obstetricians, perhaps one set. There, it was an office just like if I go see a primary care physician, I go to an exam room, they maintain their office there. It was not a situation as here where you had to be, privileges with a hospital in order to provide services there. So it was, I think, the factual situation here is totally different. In fact, I would draw your attention to Judge LaMalis' factual determination. She read the facts of St. Clair, she summarized it in her decision, and said, this is not the same situation.
Thank you.
I have a let's just double back for a minute. The Covenant Healthcare System has real property and personal property, and uses it exclusively for the purpose of a hospital, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And that's St. Joseph's? What's the hospital?
Okay, let me explain.
I know you've got a lot of different corporate entities.
And let me explain why it's here. St. Joseph Hospital is the hospital that's at issue.
Okay.
The reason this case is captioned Covenant Healthcare is because during the period of time they owned the land, and the city of Wauwatosa and the assessment records recorded the owner as Covenant Healthcare. So that's
what I'm trying to do is get you under 4MA.
Yes.
The first sentence, which is very long.
Yes.
And has a lot of cross-reference numbers.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that St. Joseph fits under that as a tax-exempt entity.
Yes, it is.
That is its property or tax exempt.
It is. The court found that the building during the period in issue was owned by St. Joseph Hospital.
Which building? The hospital building?
No, the St. Joseph Outpatient Center. The building that's at issue.
Separate one. All right.
Yeah, and at the time, there was a ground lease. The land was owned by Covenant, That's why, one of the reasons why it's not exempt. The improvements are owned by St. Joseph Hospital.
Right. At least three stories you want tax exempt. Is that right?
Roughly, more or less. It's about two-thirds of that building.
All right. So I got you in there, right?
Yes.
Now, your exemption isn't going to work for any property used for commercial purposes, right?
The exemption does not apply.
Right.
Right.
What is commercial purposes?
It's a...
You know, healthcare is a big business, right?
Right. I'll tell you what I think commercial purposes is. There have been a few cases. There have been Court of Appeals cases. A recent one is FH Healthcare, which came out of the same First District Court of Appeals. I think when you look at the cases, and I'm going to go back to some other cases that didn't explicitly deal with commercial purposes, I think what it is if you're using property, let's say it's a laundry facility, and the laundry facility is 90% of it is being used to take care of the hospital linens and whatnot.
Right.
But they also are serving the public at market rates, which is the FH Healthcare facts. To that extent, it's a commercial purpose because now they're outside of the core function of a hospital. Our view is that any facility that's dedicated to the core function of a hospital, the diagnosis, care, and treatment of the sick, injured, and disabled, which is from the statute, if that property for that purpose is not a commercial purpose, if you look at the other items that are described in the commercial purposes, it's healthcare, a health fitness center, and I think we're talking there about facilities that are outside that core purpose, could be a daycare, for example. In St. Joseph's of Marshfield, the case that we cite, it's a Court of Appeals case, it was conceded that the portion of the facility or half the facility was taxable because it was available to the public. The court never had to reach the commercial purposes language because the party stipulated. But I think that would be the understanding.
Okay.
That's what it applies to.
All right. It's not a health and fitness center, right?
It is not a health and fitness center.
Too bad. And third, which is really what I'm driving at, is a doctor's office.
Yes.
How do you define doctor's office?
Yes.
How do you define that?
Well, the Court of Appeals, which we think came up with a fine one, it's a place where doctors have their offices. You could say maintain their office. I think if that, and I understand that may not be the answer that we're looking for. So let's go to the next step. With the St. Clair case, the St. Clair court said, let's look at the nature of the services and the manner in which they're delivered. And so what I think you need to do is you need to distinguish what kind of services are provided by hospitals and doctor's offices and what are the manner in which they're provided by hospitals versus the manner that they're provided in doctor's offices. And I think we tried to address that in the case.
Now tell me the difference.
Pardon me?
Tell me the difference.
I guess we would say that with regard to this case, the doctor's office should never encompass a hospital outpatient facility.
Doctor's office shouldn't encompass a health.
And let me define.
Hospitals have a lot of outpatient services.
They do.
I go to the University of Wisconsin once a year and have a regular physical.
I would think that's not. That's what a doctor's office provides. Our contention is that we suggested a safe harbor. The Wisconsin Hospital Association suggested other ways of distinguishing them. Our safe harbor really had three parts. Was one, it's operated under a license of a hospital, which this facility is. Two, you need a referral to go to use the services. You can't call the outpatient center and say, I'd like to see a radiologist, or I'd like to see someone about, you know, I need to use your bariatric chamber. You can't do that. Okay, hyperbaric chamber, sorry. You can't call up and do that. You need a referral from a primary care physician. And the third issue, and we think this is actually pretty appropriate, is are they providing hospital-based or provider-based services? There are federal regulations that require hospitals who want to qualify for Medicare and Medicaid to have certain attributes. Hospital license is one, so we've got double counting there. But other aspects, they have to be built to certain constructions, and the regs say we put in our supplemental appendix a couple of memos that describe those services. That is what a hospital outpatient facility does. If you took this facility, stuck it inside St. Joseph's Hospital or University Hospital, I don't think anyone would think anything different. The distinction, from a factual standpoint, that helps bring show this, is that in our case, we have private physician offices in our building. We have the Covenant Medical Group has the second floor of this building. We're not seeking an exemption. That's a primary. Those are primary care and also multi-specialty practices. We're not seeking an exemption for those.
Do they have hospital privileges?
Some of them do. Some of them don't. Many of them have hospital privileges, but only people who practice in those physician offices, only physicians who have hospital privileges can practice at the outpatient center. Under federal regulations, you have to be subject to the same bylaws and be credentialed by the main hospital, which is what the regulations prescribe.
So, no, I couldn't go to this outpatient center unless I was referred by somebody?
By a physician, yes.
But somebody at that St. Joseph Hospital, who has a doctor's office there, could refer me to St. Joseph Outpatient Center, right?
Someone, if there's a physician who has an office in the outpatient center or anywhere else in southeastern Wisconsin, for that matter, who has privileges at St. Joseph Hospital, could refer you there for any number of services. Yes.
Right. So that distinguishes this from a doctor's office.
We think pretty carefully, pretty strongly, yes.
Mr. Millis, one of the facts that my attention was drawn to in this instance is that patients who seek assistance at the urgent care center are not turned away as a consequence of inability to pay.
Yes.
And is that, what is the genesis, what is the basis for that policy?
That is a requirement of the federal regulations, and I can give you a cite to that.
There, federal regulations regarding?
The Medicare and Medicaid requirements. The law is acronym MTALA. I can't remember what it stands for. But the regs under the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are in 42 CFR 489.24, and that regulation applies to all hospital property. Hospital property is defined in 42 CFR 413.65B. And in the definition of hospital property, which is the reference to hospital property in 49.24, which is what? Looks like it's B. I'm trying to figure out which letter it is here. But in that definition of hospital property in 489.24, it excludes doctor's offices. It excludes facilities such as physician offices, rural health care centers, nursing homes, and the like. So those types of properties are not required to comply with MTALA but can still be reimbursed under Medicaid and Medicare. Any provider-based facility, however, hospital, an outpatient facility, has to provide emergency care regardless of the ability to pay, yes.
In order to continue receiving reimbursement under Medicare.
That's correct, yes.
So do you accept the criteria on pages 12 and 13 of the Hospital Association?
Those would be fine. I wish I could have articulated our criteria as well as Attorney Edquist did.
What about the ones that they have on 13 and 14 that may indicate that it's a doctor's office?
We actually think those, let me just pull that out here just to make sure. I think that is a good formulation to distinguish doctor's offices from hospital outpatient facilities.
If you were writing the opinion of the court, do you think that's what you have to do to show that it's exempt or not exempt, define what doctor's office is?
I don't think you have to do that. I think one option would be to to use the St. Clair court's definition, a place where doctors have their offices. However, this would be a good way of distinguishing a hospital outpatient facility from a doctor's office.
What's another way, then, of writing this kind of opinion?
Afraid you'd ask.
I mean, unless you have criteria for getting into the exemption or out of the exemption,
right?
How do we know?
Well, I think I would say we've selected three criteria. The hospital association has
operate under the license, referral needed.
Yes,
right. That's not one of theirs, I don't think.
That's probably not one of theirs. Theirs was more referencing elements of provider-based care.
Right, and hospital-based service.
Which is the
Medicare, Medicaid.
Hospital-based services is a synonym for provider-based.
For what?
For provider-based services.
Right, okay.
So I suppose in a sense we would be a little bit more restrictive by having the requirement for referral. But
Mr. Millis, is it correct that the both sides in this case basically accept the findings of fact made by the circuit judge, by Judge Lamellis here? I think there was one minor exception having to do with parking spots. But other than that, is that fair to say that both sides are accepting the findings of fact?
Certainly it is true of Covenant. There were a few minor little glitches that are not material that we're not arguing about. I believe that's the case with the Wauwatosa, but they should speak for themselves.
Sure. So. But it's your understanding that that's basically the situation.
That's correct, yes. Let me talk a little bit about the second issue. The second issue is this issue of whether the property is reasonably necessary. And really, the reasonably necessary standard is a construct that this court adopted in Columbia Hospital 67 case. And what this court did was try to determine how to balance property that has an incidental use. In the case of Columbia Hospital, it was housing that was provided at below cost for interns and residents and other employees. Sisters of St. Mary was another case that involved housing. And St. Joseph Hospital in Marshfield, a Court of Appeals case, involved daycare. And what the purpose of that test was to determine whether or not the incidental benefit, in other words, something that's outside the primary purpose of a hospital, the diagnosis, care, and treatment of the sick, injured, and disabled, whether or not providing this benefit is worthwhile or it should be justified. And the court said, well, if it's reasonably necessary to the efficient functioning of that hospital to carry out that core purpose, then it's acceptable. Here, the St. Joseph Outpatient Center is right down the fairway. It's providing exactly the core purpose of a hospital. So we don't think that you need to go through the reasonably necessary test in order to determine whether or not we've met the requirement of exclusive being used for the purposes of a hospital. If, however, the court feels that that's necessary, I think that we meet the test fairly handily. The third issue, the issue which this court addressed 50 years ago, is whether the net earnings of St. Joseph Hospital inure to the benefit of Covenant, Covenant being a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, which is the sole member of St. Joseph Hospital and which is basically a supporting organization. This court has consistently construed inurement prohibitions in property tax exemption cases to preclude the passing of a benefit to an individual or for-profit entity. The record shows that historically, hospitals have had individuals as members and nonprofit entities as members. We agree with the circuit court that the inurement provision in 7011 sub 4M doesn't apply to nonprofit members because that's consistent with the way in which this inurement provisions generally have been construed by this court in the past. It's consistent with the statute or the intent of the legislature. More importantly, to do so would create an absurd result, which we describe in our brief, which I'm probably not going to have time to describe here, and to do so would eliminate the exemption for probably most hospitals in the state, since most hospitals in the state are parts of system and have nonprofit members. And under the Bethel convalescent case, the mere increase in the net assets constitutes inurement to a member. If that's a private individual, it'd be certainly consistent with the court's concern that you not enrich private individuals. If that's a nonprofit member, which cannot use the money for anything other than tax-exempt purposes, that leads to an absurd result. And again, would make most hospital property taxable.
Now, UW Hospital has a large group of doctors who are interested in cardiology, right? The surgery. And after cardiac surgery, many patients are recommended to go to do various exercises.
Sure.
That are supervised by nurses, maybe doctors. And the UW has such a center on the far west side, and it's gigantic. It has a ton of what I call exercise machines. Looks to me like the Princeton, which is a health and fitness center. So does St. Joseph have something like that?
It has a rehabilitation center.
We call it a rehabilitation center,
there are
right?
photos in there. It does not have, it would not look, I've been in it, and I've been in the Princeton Club. It doesn't look much like the Princeton Club. It's got a place for example, they have this place you go under water if you have broken bones, you can move against, it's like a tank. It's like a dunk tank in a sense. It's not a swimming pool, anything like that. Most of the facilities there that I've seen were not the ones that I probably should use more often than I do, but that if I were being more religious about that, they wouldn't be ones that I would use.
This one has a swimming pool. It has treadmills. It's got bicycles. It's got an indoor track for walking or for running. And it's a rehabilitation center.
So if you had this has none of those attributes.
I know, but if you did,
right.
If you did, and we used the reasonably necessary test, isn't that reasonably necessary for the cardiology department?
It could pass that test, but I'll tell you, in the statute, if it was not within a hospital, mm-hmm. it would flunk the health and fitness test. The statute, if you...
It just depends what you call it.
Well, I would think.
Okay, so if it's in the UW hospital proper, you think it would pass. I don't want to keep using UW because it's the state entity.
What I'm saying is that the statute itself, if you look at
the health and fitness center.
It says that if it says that does not include, it carves out facilities that are located within hospital proper. It's, in fact, it's the only point we make in our brief. The only part of the statute that talks about proximity to the hospital law at all. So there's a distinction. If you've got a remote location and you've got exercise machines, I would think, again, that's not been raised by city. I think most assessors would say, doesn't qualify. But that's
what
just...
What did they say?
It doesn't qualify. Sorry.
Just checking.
That was one of those sophisticated legal terms.
Could you spell that for us?
just getting beyond, if I can talk just briefly. Well, actually, we've already talked about the commercial purposes a little bit. I don't think I have much to add there. Let's talk a little bit about the FLAS test, the exclusive use. That's not a dispositive issue. It goes to how much of the property is exempt. And I guess I'd also like to point out, currently, we're seeking an exemption for roughly two-thirds of the property.
Roughly two-thirds of what?
Two-thirds of the
building. Okay.
If you look at what's not taxable or what's not exempt, there's about $26 million on the tax roll here. So it's not like, you know, we're trying to get a total free ride here. There is some improvement to the community in terms of the tax base. Plus, we think the fact that the facility is there is an improvement to the facility. But I guess my time is up, so unless you want to make any...
Thank you, Council. You'll have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Robert Hurwitz, representing the city of Wauwatosa.
I'm Robert Horowitz for the city of Wauwatosa. With me is Assistant City Attorney Beth Thorson Aldana. One question I'd like to answer, although it hasn't been asked, is after the Court of Appeals decision, are there any outpatient clinics that are eligible for property tax exemption? Covenant would make you think no, but the answer is definitely yes. First, there are outpatient clinics that qualify for exemption under subsection 4 because of their use for benevolent or religious or educational purposes. Covenant tried to qualify under subsection 4 but failed. Second, there are outpatient clinics outside hospitals that do not fit the Court of Appeals definition of doctor's office. For example, an outpatient clinic that was open 24 hours a day and never needed any appointments, that would not fall within the Court of Appeals definition of doctor's office. It would still have to satisfy the other requirements of subsection 4M, but it wouldn't be a doctor's office. Third, there are outpatient clinics within hospitals. That is not an issue at all addressed by the Court of Appeals. But our view is that most outpatient clinics within hospitals would not be considered a doctor's office. An exception would be if a hospital leased part of its space to a for-profit doctor's practice. That, I think, would be a doctor's office. But that is not a – but out the question of what happens inside a hospital is not presented. When we get to the definition of doctor's office, which is at the heart of the main issue that's been discussed today, Covenant's position is fundamentally contradictory. On the one hand, it accepts the definition of doctor's office in the Court of Appeals decision, a place where doctors see patients mostly by appointment during scheduled business hours and have their offices. On the other hand, it substitutes a completely different technical definition, not a definition according to common and approved usage, that doesn't have anything to do with property tax exemption. One of its criteria is it has to have a hospital license. That's not related to property tax exemption. It's related to other requirements of Wisconsin law. Second, Covenant says you have to have a referral. Well, its own brochure for the St. Joseph Outpatient Center says that it is home to some of the finest specialists and primary care physicians. Third, it talks...
So what's your point, primary... physicians don't need a referral?
You don't. You certain if a primary care physician, you don't need a referral if that physician is your primary care physician, and you may not need a referral to a specialist either. The third criterion that Covenant emphasizes is that the clinic is provider-based, but that is a term that comes out of the Medicare regulations to govern whether Medicare will pay for services at higher rates, sometimes 2 to 5 times higher. These criteria have nothing to do with common and approved usage. They have to do with technical matters of concern to insiders within the healthcare system, not to an ordinary patient, not to an ordinary person, and that's why they're irrelevant to the definition of doctor's office.
What definition do you offer?
I offer the Court of Appeals definition that it's a place where doctors see patients, mostly by appointment, during scheduled business hours and have their offices. And I include the Court of Appeals point that having a workspace is sufficient. It's not the size or grandeur of the office that counts. In fact, Covenant itself, in its petition for review filed with this court, said the issue of whether doctors have private offices is, quote, tangential. Now, it seems to think it's central.
I always thought the doctor's office was where they examined the patient. Has a telephone, dictating machine.
That would be a good definition, too. But I'm following the Court of Appeals definition because it is a reasonable definition consistent with common and approved usage?
I talk about the UW because I'm familiar with it, but it's a state entity. But let's just suppose it was a private nonprofit like St. Joseph. It has buildings all around Madison and Dane County. I would not call any of those buildings hospitals.
I wouldn't either.
No one stays over in that. If you need an overnighter, you go down to the hospital. And what you have are a series of rooms. I'm going to avoid the term office. That are examination rooms, that are diagnostic rooms, that have equipment of diagnoses in them, et cetera. Dressing rooms, undressing rooms. So what would your position be about all those buildings? Are they doctor's offices?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the statute is talking about. And the critical fact that distinguishes those facilities is that they don't have inpatients. Even if they provide the same services as are provided in a hospital, the manner of delivery of the services is different because they don't have inpatients.
Counselor, under your definition, then, Madison General's outpatient surgery center here and St. Mary's would be taxable, correct?
If it's outside the hospital,
they are.
Then it would
separate,
be.
Separate buildings.
Yes. But if the services are provided within a hospital, I think that's a different matter.
You know, it's somewhat a definition of what you define a hospital, because if you say it's the four walls that surround the main campus of a hospital, which is different from the circumstances in Madison General and in St. Mary's, then you get one answer. But if you say it's affiliated with the services that they provide in there, because outpatient care is growing and growing and growing. I mean, you know, when I had our children, I stayed in the hospital 3 days. Now you can hardly spend overnight and you're out. You know, you can almost do that outpatient. So it's just the way in which services are delivered now, and don't you have to look at whether the definition of hospital encompasses the current mode of delivery of the type of services, not just the four square walls of the campus, main campus building?
Well, if you did that, it would, in effect, nullify the exclusion of a doctor's office.
Well, I don't think so. I think the Dean Clinic has offices all around Madison. You can't call them anything but doctor's offices, though you might get a cut sewn up there if you fell down and you cut your eye or something. The services there are very different than the way the services are delivered in the outpatient. You could go to the Dean Clinic with a cut on your eye. You could go to the outpatient emergency room with a cut on your eye. And so, to some degree, you have the same thing happening. But the bulk of the services for an outpatient center, like St. Mary's runs or Madison General runs, is just very different. It's more in keeping with the changing modes of how medical care is delivered today. Don't you have to look at that changing mode rather than going back to the when I was staying in the hospital 3 days every time I had a baby?
Well, if we're interpreting the statute, which was written in 1957, and then the doctor's office exclusion was included in 1977. Hypothetically, what you're suggesting would be that this court expand the definition of hospital because the times have changed. That's the kind of policy decision that should be made by the legislature.
Well, I'm not sure that I really am. I think that outpatient surgery has been going on throughout the country for quite a long time. I think it's something that Medicare and Medicaid promote because the costs are much lower if the government gets involved in paying. But be that as it may, I guess my question to you is just, and you have answered it, you would lock the definition to what you think the definition of hospital services would have been in 77 and those that were attempted to be excluded by the doctor's office's exclusion.
Yes, that was the statutory purpose. And there's a reason underlying the statutory purpose that became evident in the testimony. Outpatient clinics are profitable. This clinic generated profits in every fiscal year. Hospitals, the legislature decided, needed to be subsidized by taxpayers through a property tax exemption. But outpatient clinics, the evidence in this case has shown, don't need to be subsidized. Covenant's own experts said they're flourishing. For-profit outpatient clinics have sprung up and flourished too, without any exemption. Nonprofit outpatient clinics have also flourished without any exemption. So there's a fundamental difference in the statutory purpose between granting a property tax exemption to hospitals and granting a property tax exemption to outpatient clinics that don't need that kind of taxpayer support.
But the statute that we're looking at doesn't make that distinction. What it makes is a distinction based on whether it's a doctor's office.
Well, it also makes the distinction about because it requires that it be for hospital purposes, for the and that is another reason it does make that distinction.
But, so, you know, hospital, well, I guess we could debate this all day long. I do understand, though, the answer to my primary question, which is how do you define a hospital? And you would tell me you would define it as it was defined in 1977, regardless of whether the hospital now looks a bit different than it might have in 1977.
Well, I define it the way the Court of Appeals does, as a place that offers inpatient overnight care. And I think that that's still a definition that the ordinary person would think of today, even though people within the medical health industry might regard outpatient clinics as extensions of hospitals. Ordinary people can tell whether they're going to a hospital where they're outpatients or they're going to a doctor's office where there are no inpatients. There are only outpatients. And that is a distinction. If you have to draw a clearer distinction than already drawn by the Court of Appeals, I would draw it there. Draw it between outpatient clinics outside a hospital and outpatient clinics inside a hospital. I don't think you have to draw that kind of a line. But if you're going to draw a line, I would draw the line there. I want to emphasize that Covenant tries to give the impression that this clinic is not a typical doctor's office. But it relies on statements that are not supported by facts in the record repeatedly. The record does not say that the clinic services are not typically provided by a doctor's office. Covenant says that in its brief on page 20. The record does not say that its services are not offered by physicians' practices. Covenant says it in its brief. The record does not say that, for the most part, the services are not provided by a doctor's office, or that many patients receive services that they are unlikely to receive in a doctor's office. The record does not say that the services are qualitatively different in nature and provided in a different manner than a doctor's office. In fact, Covenant emphasizes that the same services can be provided in a hospital or in an outpatient clinic. The record does not show that the urgent care facility in the clinic is not at all similar to urgent care facilities found in doctor's offices. The record does not say that urgent care limits its treatment to patients whose recovery time is less than 4 hours because of some requirement imposed on the clinic. That's what Covenant says, but it's not in the record. The record does not say that urgent care patients know they can't be turned away based on an inability to pay. They can't be, but there's nothing in the record to show that patients know that.
Counsel, of what import is it that the predecessor to St. Joseph's outpatient clinic here, that is, I think, St. Joseph's Blue Mound, was tax exempt?
Nothing.
Okay, thank you.
Why not? Why?
At most, it would show that the assessor didn't examine it thoroughly enough or even made a mistake. At most. But that's history. We need to deal with this clinic under the facts in this record.
One of the things that bothered me is, and I don't know if there are any left in Madison, used to go to a doctor who had an office, pardon the expression, a facility in the Park Street Medical Building, standalone physician. And he, I'm assuming in his rent, would pay real estate taxes. Or if he owned the building, he would pay real estate taxes. And yet, someone that practiced with and had offices in St. Mary's or Merida didn't pay taxes. It seems to be competitively unfair.
It is. But the legislature has decided that if it's a hospital, then it deserves an exemption. If it's not a hospital, or it's not for purposes of a hospital, then it doesn't deserve an exemption.
Okay. But if St. Joseph had land around the hospital, right, and built this office building in that complex and offered the same patient services that it offered within the hospital, that is, one-day non-sleepover services, would that office building on right up against the hospital, would that be taxed?
Well, we had a situation very like that in the St. Clair case, which Covenant does not ask this court to overrule. And in that case, it was found to be a doctor's office. Now, if we're going to expand the definition of hospital, as Justice Rokensack wondered, well, we should similarly modernize the definition of doctor's office. If we're not stuck with the original definition of doctors of a hospital, then we're not stuck with the original definition of a doctor's office either. So we have a situation where the hospital exemption was never intended to exempt all kinds of health care as long as it's affiliated by ownership with a hospital. It was intended, as this court has twice said in Columbia Hospital and Sisters of St. Mary's, to be solely for hospitals. And that is why there is a difference between what is a hospital and what is a doctor's office. The Court of Appeals has drawn a reasonable distinction. If the statute is ambiguous, and no doubt it is ambiguous, then the rules of statutory construction give us the rule of decision that a reasonable interpretation of the statute against exemption should be adopted. And that is a fundamental reason why the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed on the grounds given by the Court of Appeals. Now, there are other reasons why the ultimate question here is whether the result in the Court of Appeals was right. And there are other reasons why the decision in the Court of Appeals should be affirmed. if you were to draw a bright line test between what's in a hospital and what's outside a hospital, hypothetically, you were to decide that's the line that is drawn by the statute. Well, in this case, the clinic is 5 miles away from the hospital. It's not on the hospital campus. So even if we assume that if we're located on the hospital grounds or campus, that's not the case here.
What if you called it the St. Joseph's Hospital Annex? Would you feel differently about this same building?
No, that's a label. What counts is how it's used, not what you call it.
Well, doesn't it matter that it's owned by the same entity? I mean, the hospital owns the central campus. Hospital owns the clinic, so let's just call it the annex, the hospital annex. It's owned by the same person, and now the public knows it's a hospital annex. Does that make a difference?
No, I think you still have to look at how it's used, because what you have here is there's one corporation, St. Joseph, which owns the hospital and owns the clinic 5 miles away. I don't think it can get a tax exemption simply by labeling the clinic 5 miles away as hospital annex.
What if they let people stay overnight? They did OB there now, which I understand you can only get to stay overnight. So they had their some obstetrical care in the hospital clinic annex. Is that going to now turn into a hospital?
That's a more difficult case, one that's not presented here, but that makes it more difficult. Mm-hmm. But this is an easy case because there are no inpatients at this clinic, and the clinic is not on the hospital grounds. It's 5 miles away. That's why on this issue, it's an easy case.
When I read the majority opinion in this case, and I read Judge Fine's dissent, I said to myself, he has just done a terrific job getting all these facts together, putting them together, and coming out with a result. And it just seemed as if the majority did not really look at the facts and therefore was not as persuasive. What do you think of that?
There are two very distinct issues, whether the clinic is a doctor's office and whether there is a reasonable necessity for the efficient functioning of the hospital as a service organization. Justice Fine's facts were all focused almost entirely on that second issue. The only one that really related to the doctor's office issue was his point that there are no private offices, a point which Covenant now concedes is tangential. So it was an interesting opinion, but it was off the mark.
Well, that's one reason why I questioned opposing counsel about what doctrine, what analysis they're going to use. And one analysis would be, well, I heard three. One analysis would be using pages 13 and 14 of the Hospital Association brief. Another analysis was to use the three aspects that counsel used, operate under a license, referral needed, hospital-based services. The third that I heard was reasonable necessity to efficient functioning of St. Joseph, which is in the Aurora, Wisconsin Health Cooperative brief. It may be elsewhere, but when I did my work, that's how I picked it up, and that's on pages 9 and 10. And so I found at least three. Definitions.
The first two are technical definitions. They're not common and approved usage. The third one is about another issue, reasonable necessity.
What's the issue there?
Before I conclude, I want to call the Court's attention to some significant legislative history on another point in the case, and that's the question of inurement.
Of what?
And that's the question of inurement and whether the inurement exclusion should be limited to for-profit entities. The original bill, 1957 Assembly Bill 215, made the exclusion apply to any individual or any corporation operated for profit. There was a substitute amendment which adopted the statute's present language and rejected the language limiting the exclusion to corporations operated for profit. So exactly the concept that Covenant wants you to read into the statute was actually considered by the legislature. You won't find this in the LRB file. It requires looking at the bound volume of 1957 Assembly bills and tracing the history through the index of journals to the 1957 legislature. But when you do that, you see that that topic has already been considered. So to get back to the doctor's office issue, none of the three definitions that you've mentioned reflect common and approved usage of the term doctor's office.
But you've made the assumption that that's the right definition, commonly used, rather than a technical definition, if
yes.
There is one.
Correct.
Okay.
I think that that's required. And that's why I'm stating that whether you agree exactly with the Court of Appeals definition or you agree or you decide that there should be some other definition according to common and approved usage, this clinic is a doctor's office and for that reason alone doesn't qualify for exemption.
What bothered me about the reasonably necessary test as the framework is it came out of the Columbia Hospital case where it was defining used exclusively.
Correct.
And now we're going to transport it into defining doctor's office.
And it shouldn't be. It's a totally different issue.
Transported is your point.
Because when Columbia Hospital was decided, there was no exclusion for doctor's office. And so it wasn't discussed. St. Mary's, Sisters of St. Mary's didn't discuss doctor's office. So you should not be importing that notion of reasonable necessity into the definition of doctor's office. That's the problem with Judge Fine's dissent. He got the two issues mixed up. So did the trial court. But they're two very distinct issues because they depend on different words in the statute. And the line that the statute draws is reflected in its statutory language because it talks not just about for purposes of any hospital, but for purposes of any hospital of 10 beds or more. So the statute was clearly focused on granting an exemption to inpatient hospitals with inpatients. And the doctor's office exclusion was clearly focused on making it clear that there's something else that is not going to count as exempt. But in addition, the reasonable necessity has to be a reasonable necessity for purposes of a hospital, which Columbia Hospital said is a service organization. That's different than the owner of the hospital. And the facts in the record do not show that the clinic was a reasonable necessity to the efficient functioning of this clinic. Most of the reasons that were advanced on that topic were admittedly not related to this clinic at all.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Horowitz. Mr. Millis.
Thank you. Let me start with the last point first. The Circuit Court did not confuse reasonable necessity with a doctor's office issue, not at all. And I think what Judge Fine was talking about is something we argued in our brief, is that if you expand the doctor's office limitation so much, you swallow up the construction of reasonable necessity that was found by this court in Columbia, or concluded in this court in Columbia. That's the point, is that this exemption with respect to reasonable necessity has been liberally construed. We don't need that liberal construction here because we're not providing housing or daycare. We're taking care of patients. But because of the narrow way in which the Court of Appeals was, or the broad way of construing the limitation, it would swallow it up. Let me go back to the beginning of the counselor's comments. First, he said that it's possible for outpatient clinics to become exempt under subsection 4. Well, that's almost impossible under the Court of Appeals decision, UW Medical Foundation, which is at footnote 3 in our reply brief. Under that determination, any clinic that's charging market rates is not benevolent. That's that decision stands for. Perhaps this court would change that if it was ever appealed. I believe the petition was denied. The second point, Covenant never agreed with the Court of Appeals in this case on the definition of a doctor's office. We agreed with the definition in St. Clair. Here, we disagree with the definition that's offered at paragraph 17, which is what counsel cited. Those in St. Clair, they cite these factors, some of these factors, but there's not a definition. The Court of Appeals has changed the definition between St. Clair and here. And also, there's an important distinction. Counsel said that if you had a clinic, a for-profit clinic inside of a hospital, that would not be exempt. Well, a for-profit anything inside of a hospital is not exempt. You have to be nonprofit. The question here, if the facts of St. Clair, if you have a clinic, and instead of being next to the hospital, if it were in the hospital, we would agree it's not exempt either because the services that are being provided is a doctor's office. A doctor's office, wherever it's located, is not exempt. And that's why we think that this distinction that they're making between inside of a hospital or outside of a hospital is not based on the law. It's a compromise position, something that you would testify at a legislative committee. If the issue is what are the services, it doesn't matter where you provide them. Proximity has never been an issue in any of these cases except with the statutory provision that deals with health care facilities or health and fitness facilities. If it's a doctor's office inside of a hospital, it's a doctor's office outside of a hospital. Going back to the understanding of the legislature, I guess I would draw your attention. Counsel was gracious enough to send us copies of the statute, the legislation that he cited. And when you look at the changes there between the initial bill and the second bill, it's a wholly different. Initially, it applied to accredited hospitals, which presumably is for-profit hospitals. After that, it applied to non-profit hospitals. There are a number of changes in the language. I think it's a hazardous thing for the court to say the initial author had it this way, this concept, and then the same author, Representative Leonard, offered an assembly amendment that changed everything. Well, I don't think that necessarily is a good indicator of legislative intent. If you look at this change, it's a wholesale change. It changes almost every aspect of the exemption.
Counsel, opposing counsel suggested how a layperson looks at this. That is, you go to a hospital, it's inpatient, right? And he says if it's not inpatient and it's not on hospital grounds, then it's not a hospital. Pretty simplistic view, but what's wrong with that simplistic
view? Well, two things wrong with that. First of all, the courts have exempted facilities outside of hospitals, daycares, residents, so that exemption doesn't apply to those cases. It seems kind of perverse to say something that's going to actually be part of the core purpose of the hospital, the treatment of patients, has a higher standard than a daycare or a residential facility or something else that can be remote. Second, if patient perception, I'm not sure it's that important, but if it is important, here I think the court was reasonably clear. We've argued the perception issue in the brief. We think it's clear that it's understood as part of a hospital. In fact, in order to be provider-based, one of the requirements of the statute and the regulations is people coming here have to know that they're going to a hospital, not a clinic, or not something else.
That seems to me, again, from a layperson perspective,
If I ask my mother-in-law, where are you going? Are you going to the hospital? She'd say, no, I'm going to the clinic.
Well, I understand that, I think here you know why you're going to something other than a clinic, because you had to get a referral. Okay, you're not seeing your doctor for an exam, you're doing something else. No, you don't think of having surgery you're certain minor surgery, but you don't have surgery where you're going to be sitting in a surgical suite for 4 hours in a doctor's office. Those sorts of things are different. If you go in and see the facility, the court had the benefit of the photos and whatnot, it doesn't look like a doctor's office. I think those things are apparent. It is labeled, it has the same label as the hospital. It's not a clinic.
You know, what worries me is if we take your three-part definition, mm-hmm. it might suit St. Joseph's fine this year. But St. Joseph's might get rid of the referral provision
right.
in a few years. I mean, I don't know if it's required other than your practice, other than the hospital's practice. And there are a lot of nonprofit hospitals around the state, and they may have freestanding clinics, right, and don't require a referral. So we put engraved, is that true? I mean, is it possible?
Well, it's certainly possible. The example that you gave of the UW Medical Foundation, those are clinics, in my understanding, that don't require referrals.
That's right. They used to require a referral.
Right. And they're not exempt either. I know that they're not exempt.
Well, I have no idea whether they're exempt or not, but I'm just saying. So if referral becomes a third criteria, then if St. Joseph's changed that practice, or you have another.
We'd be stuck, wouldn't we?
Stuck, yeah, exactly. And we'd be sticking it to the Gunderson. I have no idea what their practice is either. In Eau Claire or the hospital down in the other counties. I mean, there are a lot of hospitals, and they have everywhere I drive. I see freestanding clinics. Most of them Aurora, but others.
And to address that, you know, we tried to come up with factors that we think are reasonable. You know. That clearly show the distinction between a hospital and a doctor's office. The Hospital Association came up with a fine set of factors. We think they're both good. If the court comes down and adopts them, then that's why we're here. The concern I have, again, counsel said we're not talking about what's inside of a hospital, but what you decide will affect whether or not facilities inside a hospital are exempt. I think it's too simplistic, I think inaccurate, not following the statute, to say outpatient facility inside a hospital is exempt. Outpatient facility anywhere else, not exempt. Outpatient's not used in the statute. Doctor's offices. It's a difficult term, but the court has to grapple with that.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any activity in the legislature to define these terms better?
I'm not aware of any. I'm not aware of any, Your Honor.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I want to thank you, Mr. Millis, and thank you, Mr. Horowitz, for excellent arguments and briefs on a tough area of the law where the presumption is everything is taxable, whether it's stationary or moves, and the exclusions and exemptions are narrowly construed. And that ends our hearing on 09 AP 1469 and 1470, Covenant Healthcare Systems versus the City of Wauwatosa. The court will be will meet in closed conference at, I'm going to make it 10 after 3. All right. So thank you very much for coming. Justice Gableman will be out momentarily to talk to the students and others who wish to remain if you are able to stay. Next week, when we will then resume oral argument.